and present. Because he's the first one to mention tomorrow's fast day. In terms of a an accepted fast day upon the Tzibur. I think we left off last time. Parak Zion, Pasuk, Hey, Dalad Hey. Okay, in response to the question, should we continue to fast on these four fast days? Right? Actually, they only asked about Tisha B'Av, but Zechariah, by his answer, implies that their question was about all the fast days, including Tzom HaAsiri, which is tomorrow. Not because it's the 10th of the month, but it's because it's the 10th month. Okay, tomorrow is 10-10. That connection I don't make. But this bell means this for you to take home and read. But we're just going to do a little bit of it. But this is just a great packet for connecting Megillat Esther to our story of Zechariah. Now there are two basic opinions in the Chazal and amongst the scholars over when Megillat Esther takes place. One is right before Zechariah, one is right after Zechariah. I think I'll be preferring the one that has a little later. Okay. Now this article is really quite has some I would say fantastic. Details. It's Nahum Yitzchak, who's actually speaking here next week.
And tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yes, I'm sorry, tomorrow next, yes. Okay. Take a couple down. First, maybe we turn to towards the end of the. It says, Megillat Esther and Sefer Zechariah, you know? Megillat Esther and Sefer Zechariah. Okay. Now, I'm just doing this because we're doing Zechariah, but if you have a chance to read the entire beginning of this, first 8 or 9 pages on your own during the week, please by all means do so. The main point is its concentration on a Maimar Chazal that says that Hashem appears through the Purim story based on the Pasuk in the Torah, Va'anochi Haster Astir Panai Mikem. I will hide my face from you on that day.
It's okay,
no problem. I will hide my face from you on that day. And that's where the Gemara says, Esther min haTorah minayin, there's the pasuk.
I've been somewhere
tonight. Sure. Okay, good.
I have a lot of other stuff. I have a lot of references here tonight. We'll take a look at this afterwards.
I'll hear it at the end of the class. Okay, very good. Okay, so the question is, if I ask you, how does this pasuk capture the essence of the Esther story? Most people answer the same thing, which is what Rashi says in the Gemara. How does the pasuk, I will hide my face from you on that day, capture the essence of the Purim story? Hashem's name does not appear in the Megillah. God is hidden in the Purim story. Okay. However, with the thesis of these four or five different articles here, is that it goes one step beyond that. The actual redemption and the basic issue at hand over what the Jews were faced with in the Purim story and what their redemption was is not quite clear in the Megillah. Sure, it's very clear. Haman wants to kill all the Jews and the Jews are saved. That's pretty clear, right? But it goes so far beyond that. What the article tried to prove, and I've actually said this in Drushes, not sure if it predates my reading of the year, but I'm pretty sure this is old stuff found in the Farshim already, is that, what I've told you before when we were learning, comparing it to Nehemiah, that what Haman was really against, and how he really convinced Ahasuerus to be against the Jews, is that the Jews don't care about Persia, they only care about Jerusalem. Right? I have told you before that when the Persian kings granted permission to build the Beit HaMikdash, it was all very, very kindly disposed towards the Jews, Cyrus and Artaxerxes, right? Artaxasta and Daryavesh, all these guys are very, very kindly disposed. But there is one Persian king who actually put an end to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, the rebuilding. Do you remember that? In Sefer Ezra, chapter 4 of Sefer Ezra, we're told of a Persian king who caused the Jews to stop rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, and that king is named. His name is Ahasuerus. All right. Haman's name does not appear there, but with the name that does appear is a group of Persian anti-Semites known as Tsorei Yehuda, and it's not such a stretch to connect that to something that does appear in Megillat Esther, because Haman in Megillat Esther is called Sorer HaYehudim. Mm-hmm. So it stands to reason that there was actually a group in Persia called Sorer Yehuda, and it's not such a stretch to think that Haman was either at their helm or one of them. Okay, a cup, can you pour a little 7-Up? I have to give you 2 cups if you don't mind. All right. We are in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Hey, and Sefer Zecharia. Thanks a lot. So, the thesis of this article is that at the center of the anti-Jewish diatribe of Haman is to stop the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. Some of the proofs given here is that from the initial decree of the 13th of Nisan to the 23rd of Sivan, where the decree is starting to have its manifestation until Mordechai convinces Esther to do something, is 70 days. 70 days to remind you of the 70-year galus. Mm-hmm. The word for the capital city of Shushan is called Shushan Habira. It's a shame that we know that Shushan is called Shushan Habira, but there's only one other place in the whole Tanakh where that terminology is used, and that's describing Yerushalayim Habira. What happens is that Shushan replaced Jerusalem for the Jews. Right? They were no longer interested in the Zionist enterprise. Right? When I refer to a Zionist enterprise, I'm not simply talking about a city called Tzion that David called for Yerushalayim, Ir Tzion. No. Yirmiyahu, when telling the people that they would leave this land, in chapter 31 of his book, bid them that they should set up markers for themselves, so that when they come back to Israel 70 years later, they'll know which way to go. Okay, you remember how he says that? Rashi in the Torah refers to this prophecy as meaning mitzvahs. Hatzivi lach tziyunim. Make for yourselves tziyunim so you know where to go upon your return. A Zionist is someone who remembers these markers. It's simple as that. Hatzivi lach tziyunim is someone who remembers the way back to Jerusalem. It's as simple as that. Now, it's just a coincidence that one of the names of Yerushalayim is Ir Tzion. Mitzudat Tzion is one of the fortresses of David. And I'm just telling you, it comes from the same word as what you might have gotten on an excellent test you once made, where the person wrote Mitzuyon on the top of your page. Okay, or the terminology for putting up a marker on a grave so the Kohanim know not to go there. That's called a Tziyun Kever, Tziyun Kvarot. It's just simply a marker. A Zionist is someone who keeps the idea of going to Israel excellent in his mind, outstanding in his mind. okay, recognizable. So, oh, that's a kever, I recognize it as a kever, that's a tziyun, right? Litzayin means to quote something. So litzayin is something in Hebrew. Anyway,
highlight.
So good, highlight something. All right, so what happens is that the Jews living in Persia began to highlight the living in Persia. Right? It's not dissimilar from the Reform decision to refer to the shul as the temple, because it's exactly the same as referring to Shushan HaBira, when Yerushalayim is the only city and it's not called Bira until then. Okay, so this is where we stand here until now, and now you see part 6 towards the end of these pages. She says part 6. Anyone see it? It's got about two pages left. The last four pages, 5. The point here is that when the Gemara says that Megillat Esther is the manifestation of Anochi Haster Astir Panai, he means that the story of Esther, its very salvation, the very essence of what is being saved, is hidden. The whole story is hidden. On face glance, it looks like someone wants to kill Jews, and Jews are saved. Very nice story. Goodbye. It's not that. The nature of the salvation is hidden. It has to do with the Jewish return to Yerushalayim. Like Haman lost an opportunity to destroy the Jews. You know how he would have destroyed the Jews? Had he simply left them alone. Allow them to assimilate into Persian life. Same for the Greeks, the same for everybody. Just treat us nicely, Adrabah. Right? Then you'll watch, after a couple of generations, we'll become more German than the Germans, more American than the Americans, etc., etc. So that is what was happening, Nebuch, in that story. In fact, you're familiar with the Gemara? The Gemara is named Ma. For what reason did the Jews deserve to be destroyed at the time of Haman? Remember the reason the Gemara gives? Because they enjoyed the meal that Achashverosh. Not just that they attempted the meal, they enjoyed it. Now, the Gemara, whether or not this is historically accurate or not, but it doesn't matter. The Gemara says that the purpose of that meal was to celebrate the fact that the Jews were not returning to Israel. That I got the Jews to enjoy. Remember, Achashverosh made the Cheshbon 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar, 23 years of Belshazzar, and then my third year. There's this. That's the opinion of the Seder Olam, that Achashverosh is quite a bit earlier, but he made the wrong Cheshbon of when to start counting with 70. So in his third year, he made this party, celebrating the fact that the Jews are stuck here in Galus, and then they're never returning to Israel, and the Jews are enjoying such a festival. Right. So this is the hidden agenda of Megillat Esther. Now, as we learn chapter 7 of Zechariah, let's see possibly how that fits in. Okay? Alright. Perek Zion, Pasuk Dalet. Vidvar Hashem Tvakos Eli Lemor. Perek Zion, Pasuk Dalet. Okay? Alright, so the question that Zechariah is answering here on this pasuk is, should we continue to fast even after we rebuild this temple? We've been fasting for the destruction of the first one. Should we continue to fast now that the second one is built? Now that is a legitimate question. Wouldn't you think so? I compared it last week to a student asking when I'm teaching something in class. He goes, do we have to know this for the test? You know, what is the reason that you're fasting? Are you fasting L'shem Shemayim? Are you fasting because, remember I compared it last week to the tears of Esav and the tears of Yaakov, remember? L'maisa, let's see how he answers. Emor el kol am ha'aretz ve'lakohanim lemor. This is what God answers your question about whether or not you should fast. Ki tzamtem b'safod b'chamishi u'vashvi'i. Did you really fast? Did you fast for me? What was the fasting for? What's the reason for your mournful behavior during this time period? Now, what kind of question is that? My mournful fasting is because I lost my city, I lost my country, I'm in exile, my temple is this. What kind of question is that? Of course they say, I see where you're fasting. Let's see how he continues with his question. What clearly comes out of this, if you read a few psukim in a row, in Hebrew or English, however you feel comfortable, is that the prophet seems to be annoyed with the question. Right? Okay, why were you fasting and bemoaning your state? Rashi understands this to mean, were you fasting from my kavod, or were you fasting just for your own particular losses? Okay. Remember how I compared that last week to the Medrash about Esav's tears? Esav cried, it says in the Medrash, two tears. It says twice that he cried. So the Medrash says that all our suffering at the hands of Esav's descendants comes because of those tears. And that's we have to pay for those two tears. So I think it was this Hosemis, he says, but what about all the tears that they caused us to cry? The billions of tears that they caused us to cry. So the Hosemis notices that this is a memoir of Rabbi Yehuda in the Medrash. And Rabbi Yehuda has a very famous shita when it comes to taruvas, that min b'mino eino batel. Right? If you have butter that falls into a cholent, and the butter is batel b'shishim, it's 60 times the cholent, so you butter it's mutter. Right? But if an unkosher, let's say you have meatballs cooking, you have 1,000 meatballs, and one unkosher meatball falls in, your first inclination is to say it's very bottle. But that's only if what fell in is something other than that other stuff. It'll get lost in it. But the meatball doesn't get lost in the meatball, it's the same taste. So min b'mino ain't a bottle. We don't pass in this way, by the way. We pass in min b'mino is bottle b'shishim also.
Tell us something about that. Okay. Three eggs at the same time.
That's giving a shear, and terrorists I'd go through that. But that's sometimes with bottle b'rov, the majority. But here's the point that the system has made, is that the question of why, how come out the billions of Jewish tears haven't been able to drown out Esav's two tears? Right. So the answer is, what is the purpose of those billions of tears? Namish fits this. Remember, this is Rabbi Yehuda who said this, that Esav's two tears causes all this grief. He says, if we're crying for the kavod of Hashem, then that's a different type of crying than Esav. Why did Esav cry when he heard that his bracha was taken? What upset him that his bracha was taken? What did he lose? He lost the gashmias. He lost the ruling over his brother. He lost having talah shemayim shmanei aretz rov degon v'tirosh. He lost all these things. So now he's upset. So why are we crying? Are we crying throughout this bitter long gullus? Although it's not so bitter for us here, but are we crying in the gullus because of the same problem? I don't have gashmias. I don't have a big house. I have to run from place to place. I'm always in exile. I'm always running from country to country. If that's why Jews are crying throughout the Middle Ages, then you're crying for yourself. That's not going to drown out Esav's tears, because it's the same as Esav's tears. Min b'mino in a bottle. But if you cry at some tuni gamani, you cry for Hashem, you're crying for the kavod of Hashem, you're crying that the Jewish state in the exile is making the goyim see the God the Jews pray to is not a God, and that the real God doesn't hear the prayers of Jews. If that's why you're crying, then that's a different kind of crying. That'll drown out Esav's tears. So that's what the Navi is telling the people here. What is the nature of your mournful behavior all these years? Okay, so let's continue with Pasuk Vav. Dora, would you take us away here? Pasuk Vav. Hello, I'm sorry. V'yechi tochlu.
V'yechva Hashem.
No, no. V'yechi tochlu, v'yechi tishtu.
Oh, v'yechi tochlu, v'yechi tishtu. Hello, atem, ho'chim, atem, ha'shushim.
Now, please, Zachariah, what are you telling us? And when you eat and when you drink, aren't you the ones who are eating? Aren't you the ones who are drinking? Duh. What are you telling us? It's true. When I eat, I am the one eating. That is true, Zachariah. What's the point? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "V'im lo tatsumu mali gam bazeh, halo atem lanashchem hum hamachov ha-mishteh." He says, what does God get out of your fasting and not eating and drinking? You see, this goes down, I think this is an important message for us at any time. You know, what does God get out of my wearing tefillin? What does God get out of any mitzvah that I do? Important to point out, Hashem is not changed in any way because of the mitzvahs I do. The purpose of the mitzvah is to something for me. Right? To change something in me. Right? Okay? So he's saying that
the final
that's what they should be doing. So he says that the purpose of your fast is not an end unto itself, right? You know, in the summer camp, so that the kids can finish Tisha B'Av fasting, so they spend the whole afternoon watching movies, they're playing cards, and this is not a fast. I'm not going to say she might as well eat, but you're losing the forest for the trees, right? So this is what he's saying. What did you actually get out of this fast? Now, again, it's perfectly legitimate to ask the question. They want to know, what's halacha? Should I fast or not? Okay? Let's see. And then we'll have to ask the question, Lamaisa, do we have any proof of what the Jews actually did? Was Asara B'Teves a festival during that time? Okay. Since this is Erev Asar B'Teves, at the end I want to show you a little bit of a chiddush. Okay, go ahead. Let's go continue to see what I'm saying.
Hello, it's the Gorin of the Korachem, the Yahadim, or it's only the Yoshi was lying with Shevet, the Shrevo. For Orehos, we will share her for Hanele, the Hashvelo Yoshi.
Okay. Now, when God spoke to the prophets, when Yerushalayim was at peace, and all the cities around her were also at peace. Yerushalayim Harim Saviblo, all the mountains and all the Arei Yehuda, and even the south and the plains were all sitting in peace. Okay? Right? You didn't listen when I spoke to you back then, right? So let's talk now. Let's admit to try to tell you what to do now. Alright? So the message is, Vayidvar Hashem el Zecharia lemor. Please, let's show the ring. Tess. Okay, we are reading something for the first time. All of chapter 7, verse 9, we're reading something for the first time in this book, which is?
To be nice to
you. Yes, a specific call for tshuva in this book. Everything else until now has been these 13 visions and their messages. True, some of the messages have been you better be a Kiddush Hashem in Chutz Laaretz, so that the or in the Golos or through this Bayis Sheni, so that you could be a good representative of God to the world. But here he's just specifically talking to them the way the other Nevi'im do. Now this is by all means, please make sure to take this home and read it, because we're going to elaborate on it next week. Is that he says that you have to have Mishpat Emes. Right, and we'll see Shalom shortly also. And this is where we have, Emes Shalom Ahavu, where Mordechai calls for Divrei Shalom Ba'emes, Shalach Manos Yish L'Re'eyu. Why? What is all that? I mean, it's very hunky-dory and nice at the end of the Megillah that we're getting friendly and we're sending Shalach Manos and we're sending Matanos L'Re'eyu, Yonim. What is it?
Everyone starts saying that they're using
the,
here they're talking about establishing a fast after the Torah, and naturally they're establishing new holidays, so it has to have some of the same aspects of what's going on in
Zechariah. Yeah, there's no question that this is trying to that this is connecting to Esther. That Esther is that what Mordechai is trying to teach the people is that if you want to deserve these prophecies of Zechariah, that Bayis Sheni should be this undoing of the fast days, then you have to get into Matanos Levyonim, you have to get into Shalach Mamas, you have to get into Divrei Shalom Ve'emes. That's very strange, Divrei Shalom. And the Chazal make a drasha out of it, that Divrei Shalom Ba'emes means that the reason why we had to leave God's name out of the Megillat Esther is because the Persians, the same ones that Zechariah is talking to, the Persians who were the ones responsible for Havar Machim, Rabbinei Achstronim, Rabbin Achstarpanim, all these words that we don't know what it means, who sent out the message of the story throughout the land, right? The satraps and all these guys, right? So they sent her the messages. So if Ahasuerus is going to have this message sent out like this, he'd better come across very clearly as the hero. Right? Oh, sure. Okay, so he'd better show up very clearly as the undisputed hero. And there's no room in such a situation. This is actually Ibn Ezra's explanation. So it's Divrei Shalom Be'emes. For the Persians, it's Divrei Shalom, right? Divrei Shalom means, you know, do it for peace, for purposes of peace, to calm down, you know, to stroke them. And it's Divrei Emes for the Jews, who will know that God is really behind it. Okay, that's the drash and the gemara. But the pshat I'm giving from here is no. If we're going to succeed in the aftermath of this story, we have to have what Zechariah called for, which is this Shalom Be'emes here. And then he gets into very typical Nevi'im Achronim stuff, the Almana, the Yosom, the Ger, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, please, Chava, would you read it?
The Almana, the Yosom, the Ger, the Ani, Al Tashku, the Ra'at Yis.
Even in your heart, you shouldn't even think to do that. Right. So do not oppress the Alman, the Asim, the Gerba, on the. Now, you know, this is. What kind of statement is this? When you see this in Nevi'im Achronim, are people really seeking the ill will of these guys? I mean, the fact is that a society where these people are not cared for, you're harming them. You picture this, how evil these people must have been. Let's find a widow that we can oppress. Let's oppress the orphans, right? Okay, and the Torah says not only treat them fairly, you have to favor them. A society that doesn't favor them is guilty of this. That's all he's saying, right? Does he say don't trick the rich in business? You can't do that either, of course. Mm-hmm. But he's just saying I want you to be extra careful to look after the needs of these people. Okay, redistribute some of the wealth in order to take care of this group. Okay, but vayimanu lahakshiv vayitnu kaseif sorares. You refused to listen. You turned your shoulder around. It means you turned away from this God's name. Yichvidu mishmo. You made your ears heavy from listening. Okay, that's, you know, there's a gemara in the Sechasot at the end of the Sechasot that says that when someone is found dead between two cities, you have to kill the calf from the neck. It's called Egla Rufa, from the Arif. Because this man might have come up to someone for lodgings and you turned your shoulder and your back, so you hit him right at the shoulders. So here too, you turned your shoulders around, and that's the Lashon that it uses. Okay? Like Am Kshe Oref. Right? The back of the neck is called the Oref. Alright. In fact, Chazal say that the name Orpa, Megillas Rus, she was called Orpah because she turned her neck away from her mother-in-law. Okay, Pasuk Yudei, Stan, would you read the Yudei? Ribam?
Ribam, Samu, Samir, Mishnoa, Es HaTorav, Es HaTorim, Asher, Shalach, Hashem, Sivakos, Beruchol, Yad, Hanavim, Rishamim, Baithim, Etzab, Kadol, Me'es,
Okay, this is a terminology used by Yirmiyahu also. Shamir is a diamond, and you see the Targum says Vilibhon Shaviu Takif Kishmira. And Takif means you made your heart your heart as hard as diamonds. You've heard of the heart of stone, right? Mm-hmm. If you said today, oh, he has a heart of a diamond, you might think that, you know, it's a good metaphor, right? That's worse than a heart of stone, right? So, again, that's a terminology used earlier by Yirmiyahu. But you remember the very beginning of this Sefer? Turn right, mamish, to the very beginning. Look at that. I mean, the opening prophecy. Perek Aleph Pasuk Bet. It relates directly to our pasuk. Can you read it in the Hebrew there? Tzatzaf Hashem al avoseichem katzef. He said, the beginning of Zechariah is telling the people that you're just returning from a long, bitter exile, and if you think you're like locked into the destiny of your parents, your elders, and you are just going to repeat their destiny, you're wrong. God was angry with them for what they did, and you do not necessarily need to follow in their footsteps. All right? So he's referring to that ketzef. He ketzef gadol me'is Hashem tzokos. So we're back at the beginning of the book. Those 13 visions that we just spent the last 4 months learning are all a digression. We're back in the beginning. How are we going to make this second commonwealth succeed? Hopefully better than the first. Okay. Vayihi kasher kara v'lo shameyu. You understand? You read Gimel?
Vayihi kasher kara v'lo shameyu.
Okay. We called. No one's listening. Okay. So you know what? You call me, I'm not listening. Mida can make it Mida. When I called you with my prophets, you weren't listening. When you call out to me, I won't listen. Gee, that sounds a little vengeful to me. Sounds like we reap what we sow. What did you say? Okay. Now let's read a Hapax Legomena. Although Sa'ara certainly is a terminology that does appear in the Tanakh, it means a storm. Sometimes with a Samach, sometimes with a Sin.
Neo, right?
What?
Neo, right? Sa'ara.
Well, I'm sorry,
in terms of the word Sarah?
Sarah with a Samach, yeah. What do you have in your English?
Storm tossed.
Storm tossed?
I will cause them to be storm.
Wow.
Storm tossed.
Okay, I was scattered would have been just fine.
That's what it has here.
Okay, scattered. Okay, you have scattered. All right, actually, the Targum is Va'avadrinun. Can you figure it out? It's complicated, but it's actually if you know the Aramaic / Hebrew, va'avadrinun. Aramaic, a bays is a pay, and a dalad is a zayin, dahav instead of zahav, right? So badar means
pazer,
which means to scatter.
To scatter.
Okay.
So wait, why are you saying that?
No, it's have is going to, in its usage as a verb like this. Storm toss you? That's a pretty unusual word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but it doesn't mean scatter you. Okay, fine. So Rashi says, but goes, like I did before, I will exile you again. That's a pretty harsh thing to say as you're starting the Second Commonwealth. If you don't listen to me, I'll do to you after this time like I did to you the first time. Right? I mean, Chagai was filled with good messages. I'm going to make this house better than the first one, and if you put everything into it, I'll be shikanti b'makom hazeh, right? Okay, Zechariah is tougher. Okay, the Esau Areim al kol hagoyim asher lo yidaum va'aretz nashama achareihem ne'over mishav. You're right. If you get cast out of the land a second time, it'll be much worse than the first time. Here we still are, all these years later, just now starting to rebuild it. So yasimu eretz chemda l'shamo. We turn a land that is wanted to a land that is destroyed, and that's what the Crusades and the Muslims did for so long, and what the Christians did as they were controlling it. Okay. Now, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag right now by telling you that Zechariah's answer is, if you do this L'shem Shamayim and it works, beautiful. The reason why I'm annoyed with your question is because it does not look like you're doing this L'shem Shamayim. But if you do, these four fast days will become festivals. And therefore, the 10th of Teves will be a yontif. Okay? I just want to, if you don't mind, for 15 minutes, I want to come back to Perkes. Okay? We still have half a year to finish the Kari Malachi. Mm-hmm. I would like to do something for Asarva Teves, if I may. Okay? I have it in my office, I'm sorry. I meant to get that before. I'll be right back with it. And you have to be clever and do some detective work with it.
And in the meantime, mm-hmm. can I service? I heard from my dear wife to know about this. I just got this reference from my cousin Sam Frank, who's quite scholarly. And it's called Da'at Mikra. And it is compiled by Harav Kook and published by the Mossad Harav Kook. And essentially, it treats with the Kriyasa with the Nevi'im with the same methodology that we have been using. The text is essentially dots supported by historical, linguistic, and archaeological references. It has. It also is illustrated with pictures of coins and other artifacts, and it is devoted. There are two volumes of this collection that are devoted to Kriyasa, which we're doing now, and I'm told that it has each chapter has an introduction to what topic is going to be discussed, and also a summary. The commentaries are only in the notes. The text is essentially follows a methodology that we are following in this class. So I thought you might be interested in this particular collection of volumes if you have access to a fine
brigade. I have one in the Bateman Drive.
So wonderful. So we can look at the we should look at the archaeology. And my cousin is now doing killing in this volume. It sounds very
copies.
Interesting.
The copy machine will turn out the copies in a minute. This is a. You'll see how this is connected to our server tables. I just have one copy of this right now. Yonason Abishit, maybe you've heard of him, was accused of Yaakov Emden of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi.
He had amulets.
He had amulets out to cure people and
scrolls.
Right, so what happened is that Yaakov Emden accused him throughout his lifetime, and at no point did Yonason Abishit ever respond to the claims. He said it's beneath my response. Of the two, they were both gedolim at the same time, but of the two, probably Yonason Abishit was even the greater one. Yaakov Emden, however, had a printing press in which he churned out many, many volumes of Sfarim. And this Nebuchadnezzar also wrote many Sfarim. And it's just crazy that the two Gedolei Hador Mamush of that time were such bitter enemies. And I actually have a Haggadah with the two of them, two of their perished together, bound in the same volume.
Mm-hmm. Is this fireproof?
And they happened to be buried not 4 or 5 feet from each other. I mean, the vitriol was worse than anything you have in the world today.
Okay.
So there are all books written on the controversy between the two. Plus, you have to remember that in the 1750s, 1770s, to accuse someone of being a Sabbatian, remember, Shabtai Tzvi is dead almost 100 years by now. Right? So Sabbatianism by the 1750s had turned into the Jacob Frankists and some really, really bizarre, outrageous movements, some of which required the followers to violate every mitzvah of the Torah at least once a year, and especially the ones of the Chayav Kares. The thesis being that our movement is trying to bring about the Messianic Age, and the Gemara says that it'll either come when everyone is very good or everyone is very bad. So since we're not going to get everyone to be very good, so we might as well try to make everyone very bad. This is serious. Queen Victoria got in on it, and she supported it because she thought, well, if they have to violate their Torah, maybe they'll become Christians. So it's bizarre. So be it as it may, to accuse someone of being a Sabbatian by that time was very radical. So finally, this is what I want to do for Sarbateva, just in 5 minutes, is that Yaakov Emden wrote a book about the Yonas Nebuchadnezzar's wife. It got dirty, it got messy, all right? And he says, Uleman haros ki ef sharlo lichtov shum ksiva b'li eza remez min haminus hamishu ketzes. And just to show that this man cannot write a single thing without hinting to his heretical beliefs, natzik po od eza ksivo shiatsu mitachas yedei hato'ev hanal. I'm going to put down here some other proofs that this disgusting man is a heretic. And he writes, this is what he wrote on the tombstone of his wife. So this, did I have the copy machine? The copy. I'll show you what it was.
It's about the whole controversy of and history of Ibushush and Hemden. Yes, it's very good. Mm. You know, J.J. Katz is all from the Jewish Center.
Much better.
Now, you just do this in order. What you have on the left side at the top is a copy of what appeared in the book of Yaakov Emden. Describing the tombstone. I actually have an actual picture of the tombstone here. Mm-hmm. Taken at Altona. It's a picture of his tombstone. This is this big one here. And this is a picture of his wife's tombstone right here.
The same size?
Taken about 10 years ago. No, his is a bit bigger. They're actually the same size. They're spaced differently. Okay. So he writes, take a look. Yud Teves Nepach Ledavoy Lekina Shira Leperkama. Now, the first, now, what Emden claims is that the tombstone of Yonas Nebuchadnezzar's wife is filled with hints of Shabtai Tzvi. For one, he puts the year of her passing as Shin Yud Resh Hei, which is actually the gematria, the year she died. 1755 is Tavshin Resh Tesla, Tavshin Resh, 56, 15.
Is this on what we have? 1755.
What?
Is that
all
we have?
You're looking here. This is just a copy from his book, the top left-hand corner. Okay? Right. Okay. Now, what you have underneath? See, it says Elkali. That was wife's name was Elka, Elkali, and you see on the other side Shabtai Tzadik. See that?
Mm-hmm.
You see running down the other side Shin Bet Tav Yud Tzadik. Mm-hmm. So that's what people used to do. They used to write on the tombstone. I help people do this. They write the name in the big letters. Like, look at Yonas Nebuchadnezzar's tombstone. You see on the right side, Yehonasan Zal. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they write like a poem with a, an ac, what's it called? An
acronym.
Acrostic. Okay? So that's something he did with Hara and Elgari, but it's even more difficult to make the acronym end with the letter you want to. So this is what appeared in Yaakov Emden's book. That's the top left-hand side. So he says, see, he was such a disgusting follower of Shabtai Tzvi. He had to put the word Shabtai with a big tzaddik there in order to show, even on his wife's tombstone, he couldn't control himself. And what's the word Shira at the top? Shira is what they used to call Shabtai Tzvi. It stood for Shabtai Yerum Hodo. Okay, they also used to call him Amira, Adonenu Moreinu Yerum Hodo. Shira was one of the names of Shabtai Tzvi. And just coincidentally, the year that she died fit the gematria of Shin Yud Resh Hei.
What
was it? 5615. Shabtai Yerum Hodo. May his glory be uplifted. Okay. Now, you see on the right side it says Edward Duketz, Krakow 1903, Sefer Or Lemoshavlo. You see it?
Yes.
This is a person in 1903 who went around Europe. And thankfully he did this, because a lot of what he did is now doesn't exist. He went around Europe and he took records of thousands of tombstones of famous people, famous Jews. And he numbered them. You see 3,077, 3,078, you see this? Okay. And he numbered them and just copied down what was on the tombstone. Now what's very interesting is that he actually copied down every single word that appears here. It's exactly the same words that appear on the tombstone. However, it's very mashma from the picture that I have right here that neither of them have the true picture of what the tombstone is. All the words, the letters are all the same on this picture as well as these two. But the spacing is different. Mm. And what Yaakov Emden did was he was the one who put this big Shin Bet. These letters are not big here. They're all the same size. Right? Mm. Okay. No, I'm sorry. No, on this, on the picture, some of them are a little bigger, but it's not limited to Shin Bet Tav Yud Tzadik. They're quite a bit bigger all over the place. But don't you see what he failed to do was to tell his readers that Elkali's father's name was Yitzchak. Tell me what it looks like now. Elkali, Bas, Yitzchak. And if you put the word Shira, the Shin, right on top of the Bet, which it's certainly not in the actual tombstone, you can see. That, by the way, the actual tombstone is down here. This is the lettering on the tombstone at the bottom. The Shin is not on top of the Bet. Right? He meant to write Elkali Zal Bas Yitzchak. That is exactly how it appears here. But by maneuvering the Shin of the word Shira on top of the Bet in Yaakov Emden's book, you see here at the top, he made it look like Shabtai Tzadik. You see that? And he made the Ches and the Kuf small. So you wouldn't even make the mistake of thinking that it's Yitzchak. Right? On the tombstone, the Ches and the Kuf are big. Right? It was very clever of him to get Elkali Bas Yitzchak in there. Right? Chevra, I think that Yaakov Emden is right. There is an unmistakable reference to Shabtai Tzvi on this page. Can you find it in all three of them? And amazingly, it's not brought out by Yaakov Emden in his book. He's trying to find all kinds of proofs, and he manipulates the letters to show Shabtai Tzvi. There is an unmistakable reference to Shabtai Tzvi on this page. Not just Shira. Maybe he wanted somehow to write Shira as the date. Usually, you would write 1755, you would write it Tov Kuf Tesvov. You would not write it Shin Yud Resh Hei. That was not her name. Shira is one of the names Shabtai Tzvi went by, and I'm sure that's why he wrote it. There's an unmistakable reference to Shabtai Tzvi. Why am I telling you this today? Read it.
Where?
You can look at the picture, by the way, afterwards if you want, but it's a mamish, an exact likeness of what's here at the bottom.
Yeah.
You haven't found it yet? What the absolute reference to Shaptetsu is? Is this something that something should be bothering you on the top line?
What's the third comma?
So you leave that out. It just means the way we count. Yeah, what is it? Yeah.
Because it is ready.
It is already.
Something terrible.
What are you talking about? The tenth of Teves, Nepach, Ledavoy, Ulakina. The tenth of Teves has turned into Nepach. Has changed into a day of mourning. Why did he write that? One of the obligations of followers of Shabtai Tzvi was to follow Zechariah's answer here and not keep the fast days. Since my coming, the fast days have been made into holidays. Any follower of Shabtai Tzvi did not, they fasted Yom Kippur, but they did not fast on the four fast days. He came into Yerushalayim on Shiva Sabbatamos and ate. Pronounce this a holiday because of our parrot.
So, how do you kind of go first on including the word Shira?
Shira just is the year she died.
It doesn't mean song or dead song.
The 10th of Teves, because my wife died on that day, has turned into a day of Davoy and Kina, which means grief and eulogy.
So that.
Mm-hmm. The Nepach is a dead giveaway. What do you mean? The 10th of Teves is a day of Davoy and Kina. What do you mean now it has turned? You should say now it has been made more mournful because of the loss of my wife. Now, this is very, very harsh accusation. Are we saying that Jonas and Abishitz ate on a Sirva Teves? He better have done so secretly. He'd never been able to be the gadol that he was if he ate on the fast days. Openly. So I don't know. Does this would he be so brazen as to put it on the tombstone? Take a look at the top. Does it look like it? Look at the top line. I'll pass it around.
What is that? What is the first word before Teves?
Yud.
Yud.
It's a tenth day. Tenth day.
Yeah, it does say Napach, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say, but one thing is clear is that Jonas Nebuchadnezz and Yaakov Emden are both buried side by side, because according to legend, if you will, the Noda Yehuda was passing by Altona at the time that Yaakov Emden died 20 years after Jonas Nebuchadnezz, and apparently just before he died, he said two words. He said two things. One, he begged forgiveness of Yonasan, and then he said Shalom Tzvi. So some claim that Emden himself was a closet Sabbatian and took out his own frustrations on Jonas Nebuchadnezz, which is outrageous. His father's name was Tzvi. Yaakov Emden's father was the Chacham Tzvi Ashkenazi. Most people named Ashkenazi are descended from this family, if they're Ashkenazim. Mm. So, Shalom Tzvi was supposed to be the last words he spoke, expecting to see his father soon. But students of Yonis Nebuchadnezz claimed that he was actually a follower of Shabtai Tzvi himself, and that's why he went so crazy against him. What's interesting is that the Yehuda heard, obviously just very quickly after he died, that was the last words he spoke, and he paskins that he can be buried in the family plot, which happened to be right next to Yonis Nebuchadnezz's family plot, and they're buried a few feet away from each other, because Halacha says you're not supposed to bury enemies next to each other. Not because they're going to fight underground, but because they probably have family members who are enemies, and we don't want them to come together at the same time and fight in the cemetery. So that's why I thought it was especially meaningful that I have a Haggadah with the two Perushim, bound in the same volume. So who knows, maybe they're doing something, maybe they're learning together in the Yeshiva Shalmala. Alright, so this was a...
maybe they were both Sabbatians.
There's also another interesting story about tonight, is the Ksav Sofer once had a shidduch to get married, and he was a young man, and he broke the shidduch because his kala went to the theater on the night before Sarvateves. I guess not because she went to the theater, but because she went the night before Sarvateves. She got tickets. So here we are learning Torah the night before Sarvateves. Okay, so anyway, a nice piece of history, and it's about the Nazis in Ashkenaz. Yonis Nebuchadnezzar and his wife, one right next to the other.
Where is this?
This book was written in Krakow.
So where
Altona is in
Pennsylvania.
Altona.
Where is it?
It's in Krakow. Is it on the Czechoslovakia? Mom's the same. You see, the words are all the same.
How come that one is not like the real one? That one.
Yes. So, I mean, it's close enough. You know, the top goes like this, and they have the.
Wasn't a photograph.
Close enough. No. He put this. This is his own handwriting. It's close enough.
This thing up here?
Yeah, the one in the back is this other one that I have here. I have the two of them together. Yep. All right.
This was in the 17th century, 1600s.
She died in 1755. So that's